Welcome to Risking Failure. I'm your host, Mick Dunn, coming to you here from the US in the state of Maine and talking to my buddy all the way over in Australia in my home, Mr. Mark Dobson. How are you, mate?
Mate, I have done this intro with you about 15 times because you're a natural born. So when you ask me how I am, you know how I am because we've gone through this so many times. But yeah, no, just for our listeners, I'm great. But you already know that, right?
I do. I don't know how else to start, mate. I'm sorry, but there's
No, I just meant that, well, off air, guys, Mick had to press record a couple of times. We didn't quite nail it, but, you know, but we're here now and we're live.
Well,
and
I had energy and, when we began. I had a little pizzazz and then it just, it's just so hard to come back with the same pizzazz every time.
Man, you just born pizzazz. You're booze pizzazz. You are pizzazz. I listened to your 7-minute podcast, man. You were pizzazz.
Thanks, Dobson. Moving on.
So you provoked the topic off air and I had a good example of it actually. And the topic was that we were provoking was like Mick said he's just in a time of action. He's just really loving doing stuff right now. And I said, yeah, there's this dance between a time to think and a time to act. I definitely don't know when to think and when to act. Like I don't know what the rule is. Maybe there's one we'll discover on the next 40 minutes or something. But I had an experience which I actually referred to in another podcast where I was developing this website, which will be live soon. And as I was developing it and developing my brand and developing exactly the point of difference and trying to crystallize what my offering was, I was asking a lot of people. And as I was asking people their opinions, I'd say, oh, I've got this topic or this question. I'm wording it like this. What do you think? I was getting all different opinions. And eventually people started to sort of crack it with me and go, Mark, you've just got to stop asking people. You just got to make a decision. And I got quite a lot of grief from some people as if I was being indecisive and wasn't taking action, just wasn't making it happen. And my argument was, no, but I've gone and moved too quickly on action before and have not had it correct and I've had to start again. So, and that was just doing my head in with people just kept on saying that. And what they also weren't realizing is that I was planning on deciding, but they thought I need to decide now. And I was like, no. In my mind, I'll make this decision by the end of, say, the month or something. I was still mid-journey. So, they're telling me to move towards action where in my mind, I was still mid-journey on discovering exactly the course. Anyway, in the last 24 hours or so, which is some months after that conversation, a few things have all clicked into place and I'm suddenly obsessed with action, like obsessed. And when I heard you say it, Mick, about the action thing, I could completely relate because where before I didn't know what action to take or I felt like I had time and I should be doing something, there wasn't anything burning in me. I didn't move towards action. Where right now, having spent 3 or 4 months planning, or not even planning, getting clarity, now I'm like, oh my God, action's like a drug. All I want to do every day is do. It is interesting because those people now would look at me and just go, oh my God, you're a machine. You're doing something. I'm so proud of you. As if I was not succeeding before. It was like an incubation period.
Well, I think there's a big thing there, right? Like you've hit on one thing you said that I thought was interesting was And I know you may not be quoting them, but oh my God, Dobby, you need to just make a decision. And I don't know that we need to just, I don't know that that's the case. I think it's that we need to move toward action, not make a decision necessarily. Because the action, I think in my mind, what I've learned over time now is that the decision happens well after the action. That we think we're making the decision, but all we do is make a decision enough to get us to take action. And then when we take action, we begin making more and more and more, like getting more and more data and input. And then we make a decision off of that that guides a long-term course. We never take a long-term decision without taking some level of action first.
So you're basically saying there's a whole lot of small baby decisions that you make. There's not one defining decision. The good one is like with relationships, I think, especially in like, people from dating going through the marriage. I think sometimes when they, when people date, there's that suggestion of, will we get married? And it's the first day. And I'm always like, hey, you guys should probably just go out for dinner one more time. And one of my friends said that she's brought up in a strong Christian environment. And she said, yeah, she got married at a young age and it didn't work. And she said, back then when you were dating young, and as soon as you dated a couple of times, you got married. She said, what we should have done was gone to the movies, but we got married. And because the decision was actually too big relative to the amount of experience that they'd collected in participating. And I guess that's what I was doing too. They were waiting for me to make a big decision. I was like, no, this is a series of small decisions that sort of gain momentum. And sometimes there's a big step forward or a big action or a big decision, but every decision isn't a big one. It's just a journey. And it was just been really interesting to observe myself suddenly want to do a lot of stuff. Like even to, I love coming and hanging out with you on the podcast, but even today I was like, I don't want a podcast. I want to do stuff. and that's been a real shift.
Well, I texted you even a couple of days ago and checked in with you just to schedule stuff. And it seemed as though just the change between then and now, even though it was in the text, it sounded like you were busy with things, but then and I didn't expect that there was much you would have done or taken action on when we reconnected since we talked about things last week. And you obviously had,
you know. Can you hold that thought? Cause I was just going to, on that, because when you said, you know, where I was at last week, that's a really important point. What was happening for me last week was, and this has probably happened to a lot of people in their life, everybody was giving me ideas. And if I hadn't acted on their idea, the people checking go, how'd you go with that idea? And I'd have to look for something to say, but I hadn't acted on it. And people were looking at me and said, why haven't you done that? As if I'm, you know, not driven or not focused or come on, Mark, you got to try harder. You know, that new project, you got to get off. And I was getting inundated with ideas. What people weren't appreciating is that I was listening and I was finding a consistency amongst all the ideas. And the last 24 hours I've gone, bang, that's my consistency. And now what I've done is I've actually contacted a few people, not to show off, it was never the agenda, but I just contacted a few people and said, hey, this is what I'm going to do over the next few weeks. And people have gone, holy cow, wow, that's bigger than anything we ever imagined.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is just because I just waited. But that was that pressure. Like, I gave you an idea. How come you haven't done it? I'm like, well, because it wasn't complete with all the things going in my life.
It's funny. I sense that because we talked last week and we bounced around a few different ideas off air, I think a little bit, maybe on air too. I can't quite remember.
Yeah. No, it was off air. You had some good ideas for a podcast for me. Yeah.
And I was actually aware of when I texted, we were scheduling, but I asked you whether you'd thought more about it. Because I was aware of the fact that I've been in the exact same position and found it so frustrating when somebody gives you something and you've got so many other interesting balls in the air and you're trying to figure out how they all fit together. But maybe somebody sees that one little thing for you or in you and they really want that to happen and that's what they keep asking about. And I didn't want to be that person that's like, have you done anything on the podcast? And it becomes a negative experience because then you're like, oh man, like then you just don't even want to talk about it because that's even worse.
And that is what it's like, because at this end, when you text me, I was like, I didn't want to say, well, I had thought about it, but I also hadn't thought about it because there's so much going on. And it's tricky because I thought the ideas you gave me last week were gold. I was loving it. But they go in the memory bank and then there's a day when they become appropriate. But some people don't have the patience for that. Like, I know you do. You get it. But some people don't. And even if they don't, we're on the receiving end of the pressure.
But to be quite honest, I was a little worried you wouldn't know that I got it, meaning that I wanted to check in with you just to know whether it was one that went into the memory bank, but it was a definite, but it's not an immediate, I dropped everything and just started, or whether it was a definite and trying to figure out how it fits in. Which is great too. Do you know what I mean? Like there's that difference. And I was interested to know just from my own perspective, whether or not which one of those it was. But I was also trying to be delicate of like not being sounding pushy either. That is a difficult thing where you can follow up with people and sound like you're being too pushy. But to kind of step back to where we started, where you were talking about making decisions or taking action, so to speak, and these little decisions and I do sort of feel like those little decisions, if we can try to figure out, sometimes I think we don't know what those decisions should be. And I think if they were related to which one gets me to take action or which one's most action based, that's going to get the most outcome, I guess you could say.
Well, I'm always looking for the one that if I do this one, it's going to make it necessary for all the other ones to happen. So if I call up a gym instructor and book in 12 sessions, then I have to turn up on those dates. But if I just call up the gym and pay for a membership, I don't actually have to turn up.
I agree with that. On another level to that, right? If I were to do that, the reason I probably wouldn't right now is because I'd be worried about how that's going to impact everything else I've got going on. And so that becomes a limiting thing. And I'm aware of that and I should walk through that kind of stuff. But I've been also working on a podcast, right? I'm very close to kind of putting it out there and launching, probably a couple of weeks off. My hope is I could do it next week. My goal is, I guess. One of the things I've observed over the process, it's been a little bit different to what you and I had. I had been sitting on this for like 2-3 years. Like, I just want to do something with a podcast. And so we started this and that satisfied that interest in this medium. So then it was like, well, how would I like actually build something around this platform? Like really in terms of what I do for a profession and how could it benefit my company? That took a long time of just sitting and pondering. And I didn't talk to anybody about it, not a soul. And it wasn't until Christmas or New Year last year that I sat down with somebody and said, I just bought the domain name to this and this is what I'm going to do. What do you think? And they were like, I wish I'd come up with it myself. And got all of the right reactions from people. I was like, okay, this is good. This is moving in the right direction. I got some positivity. And then I sort of just, okay, and now I'm going to go work on this thing. But months went by and that's okay too. But it didn't really like the potent action didn't happen until I finally got on the phone and started lining up interviews. Cause then I had to show up and do the interviews. And then as soon as I'd done the interviews, now I had to edit them and do that in a time frame that was not embarrassing, where 8 to 10 weeks would pass by before I'd even get back to these people. And now I'm in a position, right, where I've identified, because I've been doing all this research as I'm building this project, all of a sudden I get excited and I'm mad with myself because I'm like, I want to reach out to these people who have got something significant to say. They have no idea who I am and I want to get them on the show, but I can't because I don't have anything to show them. So now it gets to that point where you're like, damn it, I should have done something earlier. Because if I had of, I'd have more leverage to move me forward right now. And I lost that leverage because I didn't take the actions on the decisions I needed. Now, I don't even know where this thing's going to lead me yet. I just know that these first few conversations turned it into something. And, you know, those first few interviews. And so in the same way, it's like, just like what you said with like booking the appointments with the instructor for 12 sessions, like that creates action. And if it's stepping in the right direction, I think that's huge.
Sometimes I think we announce what we're going to achieve and then we can look silly. I've done it for sure, where, you know, I'm going to get myself in shape. And we think that by announcing that to people, we've got ourselves created a level of accountability. Like if you say, I'm going to build my own podcast, but there's no actually accountability there. That's just, you've shown someone the dream. The real accountability is when you book in a time to do something and there's something that's actually scheduled, an activity that's scheduled. And I think we make the difference between that. I've definitely made that mistake and I've seen other people do it where they get really excited. I'm going to do this. And they tell everybody thinking that's accountability, but that's not actually accountability. Accountability is when the activity actually involves another person and there is some level of literally risking failure. There's a chance that you could fail in how you perceived or whether or not you delivered on time or you did a good job or whether or not the project will go forward. There's some significant risk involved. That's like when people pay for a gym membership. They pay $700 for the gym membership for a year or whatever it is. But there's no risk in that. You've handed over the money. There's no risk. It's done. And your risk is not, I may not use it. That's not a risk. Like that's just life. Like risk is though letting somebody down, not turning up and them calling you and going, where were you? And you're like, oh, damn, sorry. Like there's more risk there.
It touches on something that was, I talked about just before when we first got on the line. I was mentioning an episode, which I would recommend checking out with your friend Brad Smith, who was on a podcast with Tim Reed on Small Business, Big Marketing. And a question, it was just like a big group of people asking questions and after a big presentation. And so he touched on something that I thought was rather interesting and it pegged back to our discussions last week, which was inspiration's good, but it doesn't work without desperation. You got to have both. And so the inspiration, I think, is good early on, but the desperation only comes, I think, from action. Because as soon as you've taken the action, if you don't have desperation after you've taken the action, you can correct me on this. I'm proposing this as a question. I'm not saying this is my statement. If you don't have desperation after the action, is it not the right action? Is it something, like you do it a few more times and then you retreat because you realize this isn't important enough, potent enough?
Yeah, look, I think desperation is not something about after the action, it's during the activity. So, like, I could take an action of cleaning the kitchen and afterwards I don't feel desperation.
Well, but I'm talking about something that's clearly an action forward, meaning moving you forward in your problems. So, going back to the gym thing, right? You've contacted the person. Well, if Monday morning comes and I go do my session and it's great, and then I'm due to do another one on Wednesday morning, but I don't find that I'm like that nervous don't have a real issue with showing up 5 or 10 minutes late, then, you know, if I'm not like jumping out of bed because if I don't show up on time, I'm going to feel like I'm not accountable, then chances are it's not going to work for me. I don't have enough invested in that.
No, you don't. That's where you go, all right, well, I've made the first thing, but now I've got to do something else where I've got to go, I made my first action. This is what you were saying before about taking little actions, building up to a big one. Then you might go, right, I'm going to do a marathon at the end of the year. Now that you've booked in a marathon, you paid your money and you're doing it with a few people and you've sort of made this commitment, now you need to be at that training session because that training session, if you underperform at the training session, there's a bigger expense later. Like it's going to hurt you later because you're just not going to be fit enough to deliver the next thing. The other aspect of that is that level of accountability is not significant. Like train is probably not a good match. Like I had an interesting experience when I was actually, it was when we were at summer camp in Interlochen. It was the first time it ever happened where I was swearing because you called me potty mouth another time, you bugger on air. But I was swearing and it was just a bit too much. Like it's not F every second word, but it was just, you know, it was unnecessary. Just slipped in. And they said, we're going to have a swear jar at camp. And it was like, you know, 20 cents or 50 cents a swear jar or swear or something. So I just said, yeah, that's a good idea. I pulled out $20 and said, here, I want to pay in advance. True story, right? A couple of years later, I decided that I wanted to stop swearing. And this man sounds like I've got a drinking problem or something. It's not. I'm just being open about a period of time where I thought, oh, I better stop. And I decided that it was going to be $50 every time I swore. Now, $200 later, I had stopped cold. But nobody was keeping me accountable. I was the only one that's accountable. I knew I'd made that decision. But the $50, the decision that $50 was the fee, and I was honest with myself. I didn't want to lie to myself. I wasn't going to do that. That changed the game because four times, and it's $200. Before it was four times, and it was $2. That was a big difference. So I agree, there's got to be a certain level of engagement. And when Brad talks about inspiration versus desperation, Brad is in, you know, with the scale of his business, with manufacturing, retail, wholesale, franchise, financing, and now an international market which is distributing right across the world. He's got desperation because if a certain deal doesn't happen by a certain time and the bikes aren't manufactured by a certain date, then he doesn't have a product to go to a market globally. Like he has so much desperation and people look at Brad and go, oh, it's amazing what he's built. What he's done consistently is put himself in desperate situations. He had the inspiration, and then he put himself in situations where he had to be desperate. And I had a similar experience when I was young where I had this really, you know, what I thought was a great idea. And I spoke to my friend who was, you know, bloody wealthy man, $100 million man. And I showed him the idea and he said, but Mark, people aren't going to pay for ideas. They're going to pay for implementation. And I was like, that's big because the number of times I've had conversations with people say, oh, I've got this great idea. Don't you think it's great? And I don't want to be a party pooper, but I'm like, people aren't going to pay for the idea. No matter what you think it's worth, it might be a great idea. The person who's going to make the money is the person who takes the action to make it real. And then it's sellable or viable or profitable, whatever. It's big, man. It's big. I know. It's big.
Well, I think it is. But, you know, what I want to kind of explore a little bit is the flip side of that when you've taken action. And because, look, I think sometimes what we learn from media and society is take action, take action, take action. And you just take action on shit stuff or stuff that's just not working for you and you either feel guilty about not doing it or you don't have something better. Years ago, one of my friends was doing Kung Fu classes, right? And so he was like, come do it. And I was like, well, I'm not doing anything else, so why wouldn't I? This sounds fun. And we had a lot of fun doing it. And I hit this point in time where it just wasn't fun for me anymore. And I actually got into Taekwondo at the same time. And because I realized I'm interested in something in this world. So the experience, like the taking action, was a really positive thing. I got feedback from that action. And from that, I learned, there's some other like things within this space that are actually interesting to me, but this isn't quite it. So I actually was like shopping around that stuff for a while. The same way that people do with shopping yoga and Pilates and like iterations of yoga. They just know there's something in there. They just haven't found the right studio yet, the right teacher, that kind of thing. Well, there was a point in time where like I had to go quit Kung Fu, and the guy that was like the whatever you want to call it, the sensei guy, was like, this guy, it's his passion. And so his view to me was like, I'm giving up. I'm a failure. So he was like really pressing me hard. And I thought it was just going to be like me having a quick, literally 2-minute conversation saying, hey, you know, thanks for everything. I'm not going to renew. But it was like, come into the office, sit down, let's talk. And it was like...
And you're also dealing with somebody who's elite in martial arts too, so you're a little bit intimidated.
Well, I was pretty proud of myself at the time. I was pretty young. And I said, I had to... Because he was like really pressing me on this stuff. And in the end, I said, look, I think what's going on here is that you see Kung Fu as your life. This is how you make a living and you're passionate about it. This is how I just want to exercise and have fun with a friend of mine. And I found a different way of doing it, and it's Taekwondo. And he was kind of trying to explain in a diplomatic way why Kung Fu is much more better than Taekwondo. And I was saying to him, like, but this is just exercise to me. It's not my life, and I'm not passionate about this. Like, I don't wake up in the morning and my whole day is centered around getting to Kung Fu class at the end of the day. It's just a fun way to exercise. I could do that many different ways. And so I moved on, and I didn't like regret my decision, but I wouldn't know like what that engagement was going to do for me unless I took action on it. Because I could watch Bruce Lee movies all day long. It's not like I ever aspired to do freaking Kung Fu or anything like that. My friends would make fun of me because I was going to Kung Fu class. I mean, but it was that kind of thing for me. It was like, I know, but it's fun. Like, it's just cool. You know, it's just different. I mean, I never thought of doing this. And it was my friend that got me into it. And we had a little spurt where it was just kind of enjoyable. But do you know what I mean? Like, that was something that you take an action and you can only figure out whether that's going to work for you by taking action. You can't just sit there and go, yeah, Kung Fu might be interesting. I'll just do forms and moves and do stuff, you know, online and just kind of try to learn it for myself. It's like, it's when you start engaging with other people that you figure out whether something's really working for you or not.
You know, it's a good example of the way you've handled it. But I think what the mistake that is easy to do is somebody goes, that's going to be the thing for me. And then they buy their 2-year membership, they go and get all the gear and the like, and they overinvest before they've got experience. And the way I, what are you laughing at? Why did you do that?
I did the opposite. I didn't.
You're right, you underinvested.
I probably barely showed up with the right equipment or gear on or anything. It was like, I'm just here to check this thing out, you know. But anyway, it's continuing.
See, I'm like that because when I've learned to play the guitar, I knew that if I bought a guitar, everyone was like, well, you can't play the guitar. Well, you better be practicing every day and there'd be pressure. So what I did is I had a crap guitar that only had 5 strings and it was just a terrible guitar. And I sat each night in my room playing every chord and said, I'm not going to buy a guitar until I can play the chords. So that when I got the guitar, someone said, well, you can't play. And I would strum and I go, no, I can play. Now, it wasn't great, but I could play. So what I was doing was, I was developing my skill set with something that was, you know, pretty crap. And then once my skill set got a certain level, I would then resource it. And yeah, so I've always been like that. Build the skill set, then resource it. Now, of course, there comes a point where you can't get ready to, you know, play Beethoven's 5th in E major with a guitar that's only got 5 strings and is a 3-quarter guitar and the like. Like you need to resource progressively. But it was a case of but until I was active in playing the guitar, I didn't want to go and spend a couple $100 on a guitar. It didn't make any sense.
Right. But you took the action to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know you don't play guitar now, right?
Mm. No.
So there's a certain point in time there where you realized you took it to the steps adequate enough to satisfy the interest, but there was probably never a level of desperation connected to it where you are placing yourself in that level of, like, in desperation saying, okay, now I'm going to go to an open mic night. Like,
well, the desperation was that I wanted to be able to play a few songs around a campfire. And they weren't great, but I could do it enough if we had to get by. I could just take the piss. The ceiling happened is when I started to sing. I was like, there was no level of resourcing that was going to fix my voice.
The family's like, yeah, no, that won't be necessary, Mark.
Yeah. So, but you're right, where other people, like you see when a band's going to play and they've got to do a concert, they've now got this level of accountability. Desperation kicks in. Come on, guys, we've got to get this right. The show's on Friday. And the desperation kicks in.
That happened to me with music, for instance. On the flip side, like, and I've talked about on the show before with improvisation, like, I was just like stagnant and then learned how to improvise. And then as soon as that happened, there was like a teacher or whatever that knew that of the entire group and were like, you just knew next week we're coming back to do this again. And the week after that and the week after that, and you need to get comfortable with this. And if you're not, then you ought to just move on because we're moving to the next level now. Once again, you know, it's like it's that action-based stuff that I don't think that you can really sit in a room and become all you want to be as a musician without finally getting on a stage and showing up.
Look, I found that even with running. Like, I always used to run a certain distance. Like, even at camp, I used to run, like, you know, 5 miles or whatever it was, or 3 miles each day with the kids and stuff. But it wasn't until there was that fun run that we had at camp. And I realized how fast I could run because I was running it, but it wasn't until race day and there's a whole like couple hundred people running. And I'm like, whoa. And then suddenly I looked at my watch. I was like, my God, that's the fastest I've ever run that. Because we step up when we put ourselves in a position of more desperation, I guess.
I think you're right. We used to do that at the Aspire Camp when we started that program. On the very first day, we would have everybody, 40, 50 kids, they had to run. It was like, what, 1 kilometer, something like. And it was like day one, very first thing we did. And then on the end of the
kids just hated it.
Right. What? I'm not freaking running, blah, blah, blah. I don't run. I'm not a runner. And then on day four, we would create this massive level of accountability, but not in a sort of, if you don't do this or that. It was just like we would create that.
We create an identity shift. We go, look, you know, you are not the person you thought you were. You are something else. And this is how we would resource them. We'd strategize them and we'd create this energy and people would run and they would just smash their original times.
Right. So we would time everybody on the first and then they would, and there was never, ever anybody that ever didn't beat their day one time, and we didn't do any training in between. There's no change to anything other than mindset. Now, well, we're probably venturing off into a different territory, but I think you're right in terms of like you create that level of importance on an activity. That's something that I think we can do on our own to place ourselves in those situations.
I definitely think so. Something that came up this year too, like Brad and I are working on a project. And we're creating basically a series of information products. We're both coming together. He's bringing his business knowledge. I'm bringing the knowledge that I've contributed to BRAP, his company, and also some of the personal strategies. We're putting them all into these information products. And at the start of the year, Brad was like, let's get this done. Like, we can launch this date. Bang, 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 bang. And he was right on it. And I said, Brad, we've done this before. We've had a crack and we haven't delivered. I said, let's spend the entire year getting it right. And then the following year, let's make sure that we've, you know, then let's reap the rewards. Let's not rush this. And he just laughed and paused. He goes, yeah, you're right. Let's do that. Because Brad is an incredible thinker. Like, we've got this space called the think tank where we'll just sit and we'll just strategize for hours and hours and hours. And sometimes those ideas work and sometimes they don't. We'll strategize. And then we go activity, activity, activity. But what I found this time was like, no, this desperation, the level of desperation we're putting ourselves under is not delivering a quality product. So let's set a higher standard, give ourselves more time, and then produce something better. And it's been really, really healthy. And even the change that I've found the last couple of days where I've gone, oh my God, bang, I want to do activity. It's because what are we in now? We're halfway through the year and I made a decision to get myself with a lot of my products and a lot of my offering and even the TV idea that we talk about study year, I wanted to get that done by the end of the year. And so it's like an incubation period is up and the thinking period is up and now it's time to act. And it doesn't mean you don't go back to thinking. But one of the mistakes I did the last couple of days was I started to get pretty down because I went back into a thinking stage. And I was like, geez, Mark, there's nothing to show for this past 6 months, nothing to show. And then I looked at it and I was like, actually, Mark, if you wait about 2 weeks, a lot of this is across the line and real. And then I got excited. I was like, oh my God, Mark, like just when you thought all your thinking work hadn't got you anywhere, you have actually planted enough seeds. It's almost like putting seeds in the ground and you're waiting for them to grow and the packet says they'll be up between 12 and 14 days. And you're like, no, no. And then in the morning of the 15th day, they've sprung. And I definitely felt that in the last week or so that I was like, oh, maybe all this effort, all this thinking, all this strategizing has actually been wasted. You got to start again. And then out of the blue, I could just see all the pieces line up. It's almost like seeing a city on the horizon when you didn't think it was around or something.
Yeah, but then how do you tell, you know? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you could just sit there and fart around with an idea for – you could do that for 2 years too. Or you could do that for 2 weeks. Like, what's the – there's no right time frame. But I do think, though, that it keeps coming back to the same stuff we always talk about, which is the moment you've identified something that seems risky or like you want to just wait because I need to be ready for that. That's probably the thing we need to be taking action towards.
Say that again.
The moment we've like – on our list of decisions to make, the moment we hit something that's like, oh, that seems a little bit challenging or a little bit risky or uncertain about being able to do that, that's probably the thing.
Actually, this is something else that I've noticed. I think there's two parts to this. The first one, I think that there's times when it's just action time. You just know. And it's the example I use with kids is said, you know, where you're sitting watching television, you go, I should do my homework. And that guilt never gets you off the chair. But then there's a moment where you're like, your brain just knows. It goes, oh my God, if I don't start now, that's not going to get done. And you just jump out and you go. And it's like getting ready for a function on Saturday night. Someone says, you know, we've got to get ready. And you're like, yeah. You think you need 40 minutes to get ready, but your subconscious knows you need 20 minutes. So the 20-minute mark, you jump out and you just take action. So I think with some of these things, there comes a time when the action it's just quite clear. You just instinctively move into it and you just go after it. And I also think there's sometimes when if that action isn't available, it's okay just to be still pondering and trying to work it out. I think we're looking for the good feeling. What would feel good? What would feel fulfilling? So some days when I'm at a thinking stage, I don't feel like I'm making any progress. I'll still go, all right, well, can you just think of two or three things that would feel quite fulfilling if you ticked them off? And I'm like, oh, I'll do those two or three things. What I do think happens, though, is sometimes we have the inspiration to do something and then we don't do it. So you might have the inspiration, say, to send a Christmas card or the inspiration to go, oh, it'd be great to do that for that person or it'd be great to whatever. And a classic one, a good one, is that, you know, when somebody gets to a point where they've been their job for, say, 18 months or 2 years and they go, I really need something else and they feel the pressure and all their energy is starting to move towards getting a new job, but then they don't. They go, oh, they rationalize it. And then all that drive is missed. And 2 years later, they'd have less drive and more fatigue from their position. So because they didn't take action when they were inspired, they can actually be in a worse position. So you now go, oh, I didn't send that Christmas card. And now it's too close to Christmas. I won't do it. Oh, maybe I'll send them one for their birthday. And we've never really profited and we've never really planted a seed. We've never created, you know, we've missed the window. And I think it's really important to pay attention when we have the drive to move on something, to move on it. Because I think people often go, oh, I'll do that later. I'll get onto that. And then they go to something else. I'm like, well, just do it. Like it really is a case. If you've got that idea, if you've got that inspiration, it feels like it would be a really great thing to do. Then act on it quickly. And that's part of our responsibility is to be able to instigate our own accountability, if you like. You know, like to not have to go, oh, I'm going to call someone and tell them I'm going to send them a birthday card. You know, just send them the bloody card.
Yeah, you're right. To just write your resume, like send it out, all of that kind of stuff. You know, I think that's what a lot of what I feel like writing a resume, that's a decision that I'm going to try to look for a job. An action is to send it and to make contact with people and like put it out there. But I think too often we sort of say, well, that was a big step, but it really wasn't a step in any place or shape or form other than an additional file in our computer and something else we did in our mind, but the world doesn't know we did anything. So there's nothing that we didn't actually accomplish anything, meaning we don't know anything more about ourselves other than maybe that's the thinking thing though, but there's still value in the resume thing because you have to collect your thoughts and figure out who is this for and who am I about and what am I adding value for? But you don't know if that piece of paper, that document you mentioned to me, there's no way to know whether that's a good document and that summarizes you well until you send it out and get feedback, you know?
The resume is an interesting one because sometimes, like I produced one recently, which I haven't had one for 20 years or something, but I produced one recently and the person I needed to give it to, it didn't play out. The window was missed and it didn't really matter, but I'd put a lot of work into this document and then I suddenly realized I could use it in a whole lot of other places, which is very helpful. But there's been other times when I've gone and put all that trouble in and it hasn't worked where I haven't used it for anything else. It was a complete miss and I have got no idea the science between the two. The only one I can find is you really got to pay attention to does this feel good? Because when I worked on the most recent resume, people were just, you know, people contact me, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh, I'm working on this bloody resume. It's like a bloody epic document. And they're like, oh, is there even a job there? I'm like, oh, I don't know if there's a job available. And they're like, oh, it's the weekend. I go, yeah, but I'm loving doing this. And I was loving creating that document because it was solidifying so many things that I'd done in my life and being able to crystallize them down and communicate them. And it was visually interesting and not for anyone else, but it was just for me. I was like, oh, I was really enjoying the project. Where other times I haven't enjoyed the project. And I really believe that if we move towards things that are fulfilling, then that activity, that is the science. That's the key. If there's something fulfilling about doing this, then it's the indicator that it'll be useful, you know, on multiple levels. And I think that sometimes the reason we don't take activity because we look at the activity and we don't see it attached to fulfillment and we can't rationalize why we not moving on it. We just, something in our gut just says don't. And when you said to your, your karate instructor, or your taekwondo, whatever, whoever the guy was, it's like, when you're talking to him, you are able to verbalize something which most people can't. You're basically saying, this isn't fulfilling as fulfilling to me as it is for you. And I really think that if we don't move on activity, it's because it doesn't feel fulfilling. And we've got to be, one, warm and forgiving of ourselves for not being active, but continue the thinking process and go ponder, well, what would be fulfilling? But what I do find is people make a big jump. They go, well, what would be fulfilling would be working at this company over there or working or being in this relationship or having $10,000 in bank account. I'm like, yeah, well, that's not available to you right now. So of the options available, and they go, well, I could go out for dinner for pizza. Does that feel fulfilling? Yes. Move that way.
See, but I still feel like action has to happen but before you can tell if it's fulfilling.
Do you think?
I do. I don't feel like I could. I feel like I'm in a position to tell you now that I've tried out Kung Fu and it wasn't something that I was ever passionate about. It didn't drive me. It was enjoyable. I had fun with it. I could do it all day long with people that I love, but just wasn't falling into place for me, schedule, all of those things. It just wasn't working. But I couldn't tell you that if I never did it. I can't tell you whether Pilates is good for me because I've never done Pilates, right?
No, I'm talking about pre-decision though, because what happened is, you know, your mate calls you and says, do you want to do Kung Fu? And you ponder, does that seem like something fulfilling? And you're like, yeah, sure. So you did take the activity. Once you got into it, you did it for a while, it feels fulfilling. And then you get to the point, you go, this is no longer fulfilling. I think that Taekwondo looks more fulfilling and you move. So I do think that fulfillment is the navigator, not to be confused with pleasure, which is different because pleasure, then you move to cigarettes and chocolate and, you know, and wine and drugs and sex and just cheap things that don't actually fulfill. Where all those things can be fulfilling too. A glass of wine with friends laughing your ass off, it can be very fulfilling. Sex can be very fulfilling, but it's just, is it being led by fulfillment or pleasure?
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement with that. Yeah. Yep.
I think that's why often we don't take action. We try to get rational about why we aren't or why we are, but the truth is at the moment we don't see this strategy or the activity that looks fulfilling.
Well, something else I want to just kind of add in there because I didn't have this with the experience of trying to put together a project with the podcast that I was working on, but when I face something that is actually quite significant like that, where to create the desperation, I have to reach out to a bunch of people, it's really hard to figure out how to retreat after that.
Yep.
So I think that it's okay to be honest about that. I didn't feel like I needed to be, because at the time that I was doing this, I'd already done this project with you, and I knew enough about that space to know that I can jump in here and I can give it a much bigger crack than just say, I'm going to try this. Like, I just want to go so far as to interview and I don't know whether it'll go live. Like, I was like, no, I know it's going live. I know I'm going to do at least 15, 20 episodes, and then I'll make a decision. And I won't lose face by doing that. Whereas if I was genuinely nervous about it, I don't feel like there would be a big issue with me contacting people that I know and respect that would be good people to talk to an interview and say, I want to give this a shot, but I don't know where it's going to go, but I just need to kind of leap into it a little bit. Lean into it is the word that we've kind of talked about in the past. Will you help me do that? And so it makes it okay for you to experience it and okay for you to retreat back, not because you're scared, but because it's just, this isn't going to work. This is not really, this is like way too, I'm going to work way too hard to make this work. But you don't know whether things just fall into place until you start doing it. As soon as I started taking action on this project I was working on, all of a sudden, the right books were just falling in my lap. Like, oh, that person would be a really interesting person to interview and talk to. The right conversations were just coming into play at the right times. And it's not destiny. It's just those were like, this is good. Okay, keep going. But if it was like, oh man, I just keep having to reschedule. I can't find an editor to edit my stuff. I can't find this. I can't find that. This is like pulling me away from everything else I'm doing. I'm getting pissed off with this. That would be a different sign, and it would be okay to retreat because I've set it up the right way.
Yeah. Well, that's what you did with me, is that when you first contacted me, you go, shall we try? And we played with it. And now because we've played with it, you've got experience. You're like, okay, I can commit to a high level now. And I do think the world, the planet does line up. As soon as you start looking for things, it's amazing how it falls in your lap. It's just amazing. Like, for example, when I wanted to buy my house, you know, I thought, well, what happens when somebody buys a house? And I said, the first thing they do is they go through the activity of looking at houses. So I organized with my mum, and I think I've said this in another podcast, to just allocate a day looking for houses. So mum looked for a few, and then we just drove around on the day, and we'd finished looking. And we were just driving back, and mum saw a sign for an open house inspection. She said, we should just go to this one. I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. You know, it was on the way home. So we just stuck our head in, and it's a $500,000 property. And I was like, mum, this is like for a holiday house, this is not what I can do. And she goes, oh, but it was actually more than $500,000. I think it was advertised at like $680 or something stupid. And I was, $580 was. And we walked in, and I was like, oh, but Mark, I can see you here. And as it played out, you know, a few things fell into place, and da, 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 and I ended up buying that house. And that's what I've learned with working with athletes, is you can't guarantee you can win. You can't guarantee that your activity is going to get you the outcome, but you can put yourself in a position where the outcome is most likely to happen. You've got to be in position for it to go your way, a position for things to fall in your lap. And when you put yourself in a position of starting the podcast and speaking to me and then or doing any task, and then suddenly you notice the right books and all those sorts of things falling in our lap, I really believe the world is conspiring to help us. But our job in that is to listen to what feels fulfilling and move towards that. And when we're taking activity out of guilt or should, or it's my to-do list, and it's got any other emotion besides, geez, this would feel really fulfilling, not fun, but this is a great thing to do. It builds, it creates something. It just feels good in my heart. It's warm. I feel like anytime we're doing that, things do just land in our lap, but we have to do the activities to match things landing in our lap. That's why I was saying right at the start is like it's a dance between activity and thought. And I believe the thinking is sometimes strategy for sure, what activity would get me the outcome. But part of that thinking is observing the emotion that's going with the activity. Like something might be hard, but it's also fulfilling. So, and it's this dance between the two and not over investing in an activity. Like I say in relationships too, no matter if it's a friend or a lover, you can really only plan as far ahead as the time you've spent together. So you and I have known each other for 20 years. So it's reasonable for us to say, hey, you know, 20 years from now, you know what we should do? We should be hanging out in rocking chairs on each other's porch or something. and we could have that discussion. You meet somebody yesterday and you start talking about that. That's just weird. And, you know, I think that we've got to make decisions relative to the level of experience that we've got. That's the how I'm making my decisions at the moment. Anyway, I'm not sure if it's right. I don't know. Who knows? Who knows?
Well, mate, I do know I got another project to launch now. Raring to go.
Yeah, and mine's not far off. It's going to be good. It's going to be good. A few resources. Actually, that's an interesting topic. A few resources just don't seem to be available to me, and I must have to let go of some level of thinking to get the outcome because there's a couple of little sticking points. I'm like, damn it. Why is this not falling in my lap?
Yeah, but I'm sure there's stuff, right, that you're able to take action on right now.
Yeah, exactly. And
see, because I had this same thing, even with, I started getting nervous, like, oh, I really want to launch this really soon. And I got a web developer that's not getting back to me at the speed that I really want. I'm like, oh, the exchange rate of like correspondence here, this is going to be 3 to 4 weeks it's going to take. And I was like, hold on, I don't even need that stuff. I can just go, I can go live with a basic thing that looks like this and then add that a couple of weeks later. Oh yeah, that's not important. You know what I mean?
I do. Recently, I had the discussion with someone about when we're getting burnt out, and I said, yeah, but those times when you're throwing a bit of a tantrum because you're not getting what you want, it's not working. I've observed that and said, well, anytime you're throwing a tantrum, the activity that you're investing in is not crucial. It's not actually what you, as important as you think it is. Because you can spend 2 days on the phone to your, you know, your telecommunications company, your gas company, going, well, I should have this connected by this day, and it gets all annoyed. And you go, in actual fact, like, we were getting so invested in something that just wasn't crucial. And I think that your example just then was that. It's like, well, is this really necessary? Like, right now, as I'm asking for it. Like, granted, at some stage, but is this the most potent activity?
It's a good stopping point, mate.
Yeah,
this is an interesting discussion. I'm ready to get into some stuff. That's for sure.
Mm. All right. Well, this time next week, we both will have smashed out some shit, and we'll be able to report on it.
Hey, you know who smashed out some shit recently is our previous guest from episode number 16, Sean McNeil, finished the Ironman.
Hang on, was that already? Was that when was that?
This was over the weekend. Long weekend in Cairns.
Further off. Wow.
Yeah. It's amazing, huh?
That's amazing. For people that didn't hear the episode, Sean has got a degenerative disease where basically all her muscles are just switching off one after the other until eventually she'll just be trapped in a body that doesn't move and only up until her lungs stop. And she always wanted to do a marathon and an Ironman, and somebody, once she had the disease, couldn't do it anymore, but a good friend came and said, well, what if I carry you? What if I push you in a wheelchair and we go on a tandem bike and I drag you in the swim? And she was going on that with, like, she just falls over easily, Sean, right now. She's a very fragile person now, but she's put herself in an incredibly challenging position. She was still training and everything. And so Craig's carried her through. That is phenomenal. I didn't know that. That's awesome. Thanks for updating me. I will get in touch with her.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So, big achievement. Holy cow. It's like running 3 marathons, essentially. You're talking a swim-type marathon, 3 to 4 kilometers, and then a bicycle, 180 kilometers, and then a running marathon after that. It's insane. So, really, really cool stuff.
I missed that. Damn it. Damn busyness of life. Damn you. All right, see you next week, mate.
Same goes, mate. I look forward to talking to you. Right. Take action.
See ya.
You've been listening to Risking Failure. To join the community and access more free content, news, and updates, subscribe at riskingfailure.com.